Yeah, my name's Justin. I'm an addict. Hello? Sorry. Sorry. that started well. Yeah, as I said before, I'm an addict. And I've been thinking about what I'm going to share about. And, you know, I picked up my ear hearing last week. And thanks. And I suppose, you know, what I need to share about is how I've sort of got to where I am today, you know, a year clean and, you know, the life that I've got, which is basically a fantastic life that I never thought possible when I was using. You know, because I thought when I came into NA, I was here because I had a crack cocaine problem. You know, I didn't think I suffered from a disease of addiction. But the fact is, I didn't pick up crack cocaine because my life was going great. You know, by the time I picked up crack cocaine, my life was already a mess. You know, before it was crack cocaine, it had been cocaine. Before it was cocaine, it had been ecstasy. Before ecstasy, it had been amphetamine. You know, right back to when I was sort of 14, 15, and I started drinking and smoking weed with my friends. You know, because when I grew up, all my friends are addicts. None of them are. They used to say to me, you know, what's wrong with you? Why, you know, we used to go out of a weekend and they'd go home or they'd go to work and I'd stay out. You know, and they'd say, why don't you just, you know, what's wrong with you? What's the matter with you? And I didn't know, and neither did they. And the first drug that got me in trouble was ecstasy. You know, I used to take ecstasy. I used to go out raving and what have you. But I used to stay out on a Sunday, on a Monday, on a Tuesday still, you know, taking ecstasy. And eventually, my behaviour got so bad that I ended up in a psychiatric ward in Manchester, totally paranoid and just, you know, wasn't eating. Everyone, all my friends and family were worried about me, so they thought, you know, put me in a psychiatric ward for a week and that'll just cure me and I'll come out and I'll be all right. And that's what I thought. I thought, if I come out and I don't touch ecstasy, I'll be fine. So I moved on to cocaine, you know, as you do. And I started taking cocaine just like I took ecstasy, you know, all the time. And basically, because cocaine is a lot more expensive, I struggled to pay for it. So I started dealing it to pay for it. And I started getting in debt and juggling around debts. I remember being sat in my house one Monday morning. I had a few hundred quid in my pocket and I owed out about £1,000 or whatever it was. And I thought, I don't know what to do. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll go to London, you know. So they don't have drugs in London. I'll be safe down there, you know what I mean? The answer to all my problems. So I got on a coach and I came down to London. And the few hundred quid I had, it didn't last very long. And I ended up walking through Leicester Square, funnily enough, just down the road here, with a crate of beer and a few quid in my pocket. And I saw these two lads begging outside a shop. And I felt sorry for them, you know, and I went over and I gave them a beer and I started talking to them. And they said to me, how much you got? So I thought, you know, £3. And they said, oh, we've got enough, come with us. And they introduced me to crack. And that was it then. From me seeing them begging and feeling sorry for him, half an hour later I was sat next to him begging. You know, from then on, for the next 2 years, all I did was smoke crack and get the money to smoke crack. And it almost, you know, it seemed to happen overnight. And the way I was getting money to smoke crack was really, really petty crime. You know, I was out shoplifting things like ovulation testing kits and, you know, toothpaste. I remember this time when this woman asked me to get her as many ovulation testing kits as I could get my hands on. So I thought, right, okay. So I went into the chemist and I seen them, they were 15 quid each. I thought, oh, it's a touch. So I nicked 20 boxes of them. So I had 300 quid's worth of ovulation testing kits. I thought, I've made it, I'm going to get a wonner for these. I took it to her and she said, oh, I don't want them. They're the wrong sort. And I remember sort of begging her to give me £9 for them because I couldn't give them away, let alone sell them. You know, but when I came down to Manchester, that wasn't what I had planned. You know what I mean? To be stowed with a bin bag full of ovulation testing kits, begging someone to give me £9 for them. And eventually, you know, I got arrested and I ended up being wanted. I didn't go to prison at first, I was wanted. And my first attempt to get clean was one night, stood out here on the Strand, and it was a Sunday night and it was raining. And it took me 2 hours to earn a tenner just from, you know, scrimping and scrimping, what have you. And I'd smoked what I got and it had done nothing for me. I remember being gutted and I'd had enough. And I went into Charing Cross Police Station down the road and I handed myself in. You know, I said I'm wanted because I wanted to get clean, you know. And I sat in my cell. And I sat there for about half an hour and I thought, you know what, I made a mistake here. I don't think I want to go to prison, funnily enough. I think I'd rather go back out there. But it was too late. But what happened was, my solicitor contacted my mum and said, you know, your son's here. I went to court and my mum put up a load of surety for me because she thought I was dead. She hadn't heard from me for years, you know what I mean, 2 years, whatever it was. And I managed to get bail because the judge said, oh, you've handed yourself in, he's trustworthy. And as soon as I left the court, with all these bail conditions that I'd signed to do, you know, to sign on at my mum's house, to live at my mum's house, to sign on at Manchester Police Station, whatever they threw at me, I'd signed it. And I left, and I just went straight back onto smoking crack. You know, that night in the cell just cost my mum like £800. But, you know, when I walked into that police station, I had every intention of quitting drugs. That was what I walked in there for. And eventually I did end up in prison. And when I was in prison, I didn't use... I did use, I smoked cannabis and I smoked heroin. But, so I did use, yeah. But it's an honest programme, I did use in jail. I came out and I thought, right, I need to stay off crack. I just won't touch crack and I'll be okay. You know, I'll just smoke weed and drink and I'll be fine. And what happened was I moved into a hostel in Bayswater. And I remember one night this lad came back and he had some methadone. And I'd never touched methadone and I've never touched it since. And he said to me, you know, oh, do you take methadone? And I said, oh yeah, of course I do. I love methadone, me. I can't, you know, and I drank all this methadone. And the next thing I knew, I woke up in hospital with my top that I was wearing all cut open where the doctors had had to, you know, sort of resuscitate me. And my only concern was the fact they cut my top, you know, not the fact that I nearly died, not, you know, where I'd ended up. It was just like, you know, oh, they've nearly cut my top open. I was pretty indignant about it. And then I sort of thought to myself, this is a wake-up call. I need to get out of London, you know. Like Manchester been the problem, now it's London. And I went back to Manchester. And for the next few years, I was working. And I sort of kept up in front of everything being okay. But what I was doing, I was using cocaine again. But because I used to sort of compare myself to when I was smoking crack and being in prison, I used to say, oh, at least I'm not smoking crack. At least I'm not in jail. At least I'm not shoplifting ovulation testing kits. You know, I'm all right. And I wasn't, and I ended up coming back down to London, visiting someone one day. And on the way home, I thought, I'll just stop off at where this meeting used to be at Connections. It was a day centre there. I thought, I'll stop off there, get a shave before I go home. And I walked in, and the first two people I bumped into were the two people that were sat outside that shop that day that introduced me to crack. And, you know, when you talk about repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results, well, this is exactly what happened. You know, we just did the same old things that we used to do. We went out that day and we said, we'll just have one pipe, eh, together, you know, for old time's sake. You know, a bit of nostalgia. And we ended up back in the same old situation. We all got nicked, you know. And what happened with me was my friends went to prison. And I went to Bow Street Magistrates. And what happened was when I got arrested for shoplifting. And I kicked off with a policeman when he arrested me. And I was up for assaulting a policeman and shoplifting. And I remember I was sort of... The judge remanded me, said, this is obviously a custodial, I'm remanding you. And I was in the court cells again, and this was like 7 years later since I'd last been there, you know. And in the meantime, I'd been back to Manchester, I'd had a job, I'd been abroad, I worked abroad for a little while trying to sort myself like that out by going abroad, which obviously didn't work. And I just remember asking for help. I just thought, oh, I've ended up back here, you know. I was skinny again, I weighed like about 9 stone again, it was the same old charges, and I was going back to the prison that I'd left, you know, all them years before. And amazingly, the judge called me back up. He called me back up, and he said, "You're going to go to a detox, basically." He said, "I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you bail, and I want you to get yourself in a detox." So that was like a wake up call, you know, from sort of standing in that cell waiting to go to prison, saying, "I need help," to getting told that, you know, you go into a detox. So, you know, I did. And at first, I'll be honest with you, the only reason I went to that detox was to avoid prison, you know. I didn't know if this was what I wanted. I was a bit unsure. And a couple of days, you know, I was just in this detox and I felt really, really low. And you talk about rock bottoms and, you know, when I was using, I always struggled to have a rock bottom because I was using, and reality never seemed to hit me. But when I was in that detox for the first couple of days, I think that's when I really hit my rock bottom. You know, I sort of looked in the mirror and I saw this skeleton looking back at me. I had a bin bag with a few items in, which was sort of everything that I owned. And, you know, I had my mum on the other end of the phone with the nurse holding the phone, and my mum was sort of crying, and it sort of sunk in that, you know, this is where I'd ended up because of my using and that I needed to stop it. And fortunately for me, NA came into this detox. And I remember the lad that came in, he took the meeting, he was 8 years clean. And he said, I'm 8 years clean. And I remember after the end of the meeting, I just couldn't believe that. And I said to him, so what do you do, just smoke weed? And he said, no, he said, it's total abstinence. And I said, well, how do you do that? He said, I do it a day at a time. You know, that's how I do it, a day at a time. And that sort of stayed with me, that, throughout my recovery, you know. And what happened was, from this detox, I moved on, I went to a rehab. And in the rehab, they told us to go to two meetings a week. But the first few meetings I went to, I used to sort of sit in meetings, and I used to look around, and I used to see a lot of people that were a lot older than me. That's where I used to look at it. And I used to hear people saying, thanks, I was using for 30 years and I got clean. I was using for 40 years. And I used to think, well, hang on. I've only used for 10 years. Maybe if I come back when I'm 30, I'll still be young enough to get this. And two things sort of happened to me that changed my attitude. The first thing that happened was I got a phone call one day and there was a girl that I used to use with and she died, she'd overdosed, and she was a few years younger than me. And that sort of made me think, well, hang on, maybe you haven't got a few more years out there. And another thing that happened was I started doing a bit of step work. I did a step one and I started to look at where my using had taken me. You know, it's taken me to begging, to being homeless, to shoplifting, to go to prison, to go into psychiatric wards. It, you know, it just taken me to just madness throughout it all. And I thought, you know what, I don't really want to go back to a day of that, let alone a few more years of that. So I started to just follow the suggestions. You know, I did a 1990. I got a sponsor. You know, I worked with my sponsor and I still do. You know, and in my using, my life just got worse and worse and worse. And in my recovery, it just keeps getting better and better and better. And, you know, I went up to Manchester a few weeks ago where I'm from, and I surprised my mum, you know. I got a lift off my friend. He was down for Valentine's Day with his missus, and he took me back up there with him. And my dad let me in the house, and I was sat in the front room, and my mum walked in from work. And, you know, she jumped up for joy and hugged me. Now, you know, if 30 months ago, if my mum walked in the front room and seen me sat there, she'd have screamed and rang the police, because, you know, that was the sort of son I was at them times. And, you know, my life just, it just keeps getting better. And by coming to NA, I'm able to stay clean. You know, that's what NA does for me. It helps keep me clean. And by being clean, I'm able to go and get the life that I want. You know, if I was using, I wouldn't be able to have the life that I've got now. You know, and I'm going to university. You know, I'm at college at the moment. I've just been accepted to a university. And I've got, you know, I've got my friends and my family back in my life. And I'll end on this. You know, my friend who took me up to Manchester, I went to his house for tea. And he's got these two little Shih Tzu dogs that he has, you know, that him and his missus have bought. And I'm watching these dogs running around, yeah, and it dawns on me, you know, that these dogs have a better life than I had when I was using. You know, they've got people around them that care and love about them. They get bathed when they're dirty. They sleep in a nice warm bed and they eat when they're hungry. You know, and they were things that I never had when I was using. And the insanity of this illness is, if I don't do this program at work, having a life not quite as good as my mate's dog will seem like a good idea. So you know what, I do the work and I keep coming to the meetings and I don't pick up. And I'm very grateful for you asking me to do this, Chair. Thanks.